Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you are a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We're here to talk about Megan.
Megan.
Released in 2022.
The first film of our summer project of technologically based horror movies.
Fun.
Fun. Fun with tech.
That tries to...
kill you.
Tuck you in at night.
Tuck you in at night. Yeah. That tries to make your life easier.
Ooh. And even still, I'm going to ask Alexa to do stuff for me, even today.
Resentfully, begrudgingly.
Like, God damn it, turn on a timer. Come on. But before we get into that, what's new with you, Katie? I'm sure it's not
school-related. It's school-related, folks, but guys, we promise.
We're on the struggle bus here.
Yeah, it's the what's news will not be school-related very soon because
in the summer.
We're getting so close.
Yeah, we're coming to the finishing line. Yeah.
Even though when this comes out, summer will have already begun and we will be blissfully happy doing fun stuff. Right now...
being comatose, getting up and eating, watching stuff, fun, doing fun things.
But my school thing is kind of fun that and it was a little a while ago our carnival that we have every spring. One thing that our principal added, I guess 3 years ago, was a pie your teacher booth. And you know, it's obviously it's not real pies because that would be cost prohibitive. But it
give me a nice $30 julian pie
right in my face. No, I want it to be mincemeat. But no, it's just paper plates with, you know, canned whipped cream sprayed onto them. And obviously it's optional. Teachers may choose to sign up to be pied, and then other teachers sign up to, like, you know, facilitate the booth to, like, take the kids' tickets and put the whipped cream on the plates and and all of that. And I've done it every year. It's kind of, it's fun. You know, we put on big disposable ponchos and disposable shower caps, and we sit behind this, like, tarp that has holes cut in it for our faces. And all of our kids, like, they, you know, come pony up their tickets and they get their plates of whipped cream to throw and try and hit us in the face. And some of them, you know, a lot of them miss, you know, it's not as easy as you think to throw a paper plate of whipped cream. The
it
weight
seems like it'd be really hard.
It's very lightweight and your normal throwing motion doesn't really work. There are some techniques that some kids figure out that are pretty effective. And so, you know, we do get nailed a handful of times, but a lot of the plates go wide
on the ground.
Yeah, on the ground. But it's fun. Like the kids get really cute and excited about it. Like the week leading up to the carnival, they're like, when are you going to be there? You know, I'm going to get you so bad. And they're just like really into it. But another thing that's very sweet is, you know, kids that aren't our students, like especially when they're much littler kids and their parents have brought them to the carnival. So like some of them are like little enough where they're like not even students at our school yet or like little preschoolers or kindergartners. And their parents are like, oh, come do this. It's fun. And you see this look on their faces sometimes like they think it's a trap. Like they think they're getting their parents are trying to trick them into doing something bad and then they're going to get in trouble because they're like, you want me to throw something at a grown up's face? Like they definitely are suspicious and some of them refuse to do it there. And you can see in their faces that they're like, no, I've been taught that we're not supposed to throw things at people. I certainly shouldn't throw something at a grown up's face. And my parents are trying to get me to do this. And they're like, something's fishy here. So it's like, it's pretty sweet to see that.
You're going to be like, no, Christmas for you. Yeah. You made the wrong choice.
Yeah, it's like their little baby consciences that are forming are like little alarm bells going off in their heads.
Yeah. Is this a green choice or a red choice?
Yeah. And then one thing that we did forget to enforce this year, because I've done shifts, like, you know, usually at the carnival, like in the evening is when you get the older kids there, and then younger kids are there, you know, morning, afternoon or whatever. And my shift this year happened to be in the afternoon. And so there weren't a lot of bigger kids. And there, in years past, there's been like older kids had to step further back, right? Mm-hmm. but nobody was really, nobody was worrying about that too much because it was afternoon and there were so few older kids there. And then at one point during my shift, we ran out of this one package of paper plates that were like the very like super flimsy, lightweight ones. Mm-hmm. And they started using these much like more rigid, sturdy ones. And one seventh grade boy, like launched one at me, and I just made a joke about the plates and how I was like gonna get my nose broken. Mm-hmm. And he just fired it at me, and he's only like, you know, they're only maybe 3 or 4 feet away on mm-hmm. the other side of this like table. Mm-hmm. And the plate rotated, and so the whipped cream did not get on me, but the edge of this very sturdy plate hit me right in the bridge of the nose, like as strong as this like 13-year-old boy could throw it. And I was like, fuck, did I just break my nose?
It's for a charity.
Yeah.
Not worth it.
Yeah. And so that was fun. Kind of a bummer part of the carnival, though, because we do an auction, and one of the things we auction off are teacher experiences. And so I've done like a movie day in the past. But this year I actually was going to do a scary movie day. Mm-hmm. And I had really like thought long and hard about what movie I could show, because obviously it's at school.
There's parameters.
Catholic school. And yeah. And so I was going to go with The Woman in Black, because mm-hmm. there's like no, you know, there's no swearing, there's no adult material, there's no nothing, but it's very scary. Yeah. And I thought, you know, it would be appealing because it is Daniel Radcliffe. And the parameters of my auction item were sixth grade and up, like, you know, so we don't have little kids showing up. And
Scooby-Doo.
And I didn't tell like the classes or anyone that I was doing it. It was just kind of like added to the auction that is like disseminated online. I got zero purchases.
Everyone thinks your experience is some garbage.
Evidently. And like, and it was kind
of, I didn't know people hated Woman in Black so much.
I know. And so it's like, okay, well, I'm off the hook because now I don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
But at the same time, and I know that if I had like talked it up to my classes, like I'm
probably
sure,
would have had some
traction. They didn't even know I was doing it, because it's not like the, you know, fifth and sixth graders go down this insane catalog of auction items online to decide what they're going to tell their parents to like buy or whatever.
Yeah. And your stuff seems like it's done differently. Ours is like stuff experiences all posted in the hallways.
Yeah, we don't advertise them in the class or in the school beforehand. Like mm-hmm. there's tables at the actual carnival, and so like there was a piece of paper on the auction like table or whatever at the event, but again, like the kids don't go look at that stuff. Yeah, so bummer that I didn't get anybody, but now I don't have to do anything, so
well,
yeah. Sorry, not sorry.
Good for you.
Yeah. So what's new with you?
More of the same, like what you did. Well, we had our open house, like I mentioned in a previous episode. I did auction off it was a raffle. And my experience is having pizza lunch with me and like watercoloring or like coloring pages. And my student won it, and he will invite two of his friends, and they're sweet little boys, so they're super excited. The option was either tea party or pizza party. I'm pretty sure they're gonna do we don't want a tea party, thank you though.
No,
I don't want that.
That's sweet though.
So they're sweet, and it's just during my lunch hour. And I have Victor bring like a pizza from the pizza joint down the road, and mm-hmm. it was
super
fun.
Easy.
Yeah, it's easy and fun, so they're very excited. It's mm-hmm. sweet to be like, oh my gosh, we won. We're so excited. I'm like, I'm not that great to have lunch with, but whatever. Yeah. So what's new with me? I mean, I'm getting ready for the end of the year. I have like several weeks. So it's like a marathon, you know, like report cards, all this stuff, meetings, a lot of things going on. But I've just been trying to read a lot of like scary books. I think I've mentioned before that I'm in super spooky like mood. Mm-hmm. Like I've been watching a lot of scary stuff and excited. So The Last of Us has come back on, and I love that show, and it's definitely scary. It makes me anxious. Mm-hmm. And if something makes me anxious, you know, it'll be terrifying probably. But I am excited about just like a lot of the possibilities that are coming out, like scary movie wise. So the new shoot, I forget what it's called. There's a new movie and I think it's being released soon or it's out already. I'm not really sure, but it's by the creators of Talk to Me.
Oh yeah.
And the premise seems terrifying, so I'm very excited to to see that.
Is that the one that Victor sent us the trailer for about the kids that disappeared?
No,
that one looks really good too.
That creator did Barbarian.
Oh yeah.
So okay. I'm very excited to see that. I'm like just watching stuff, and while I like a good remake or something, revisiting
A sequel or something.
Or revisiting material that I think would be, you know, can be honored by new filmmakers and stuff like that. I do like something more original too.
Yeah.
So lately there's kind of been, with Blumhouse especially, a lot of stinkers. Yeah. Lately, where I'm just like, ugh, you know, The Red Door, come on.
Oh, that was so bad.
Yeah, or like...
what a bummer to end that franchise that way.
Yeah, and it had so much potential and it was amazing and I loved it. And then The Conjuring, I'm like, eh.
Yeah, Devil Made Me Do It was weak.
Yeah.
And we love that era, the Satanic Panic. Like,
right, but I also get mad.
That's true.
Because of all of the injustices that happened, because, you know, my background in criminology and all that stuff. So I get all riled up. But I'm so excited about, like, the new 28 years later movie. And I know a handful of movies are going to come out in that world.
Yeah.
So I've just been, like, waiting. And how freaking long have I waited? Decades for this stuff to come out. And then, yeah. So I'm excited. I'm ready. I'm ready for Halloween month. I'm ready for all the stuff that come out that's been advertised that I'm just like here for. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping we can talk about it. And I definitely want to rewatch Sinners with subtitles because I can't hear in one of my ears. So it's like I have a hard time.
Yeah, we didn't even mention because we had just seen that when then we recorded like shortly after, and then we didn't even mention that we went to see it.
Yeah, and it's so good.
So good.
It's fantastic. It's amazing. Yeah, but I know I missed some dialogue because they had very thick like Southern accents, and they kind of mumbled some of the people who were speaking. So I would like to revisit it and read the captions because I'm like, I get the gist, but I don't know exactly what they said. Yeah. So I feel like I missed stuff. So
yeah, and on the other end of the spectrum, I just remembered this. I did watch, you know, not super attentively because of what it was. Heart Eyes.
What's that?
That's the one that came out right around Valentine's Day this year about the heart eye killer, like the guy with the mask where the holes in the mask are heart shaped. It just came free on streaming, and so I was like, okay, you know, expecting it to be a turd. I will say that, and again, I always talk about the expectations you go in with. I expected it to be a turd. I was a little bit pleasantly surprised because it almost seemed a little bit self-aware and cheeky.
It can't be fun.
Yeah, and because it was they used like the perfect formula of a romantic comedy, because it's all about this couple, and like they have the meet cute at the beginning, and then oh my god, he's the guy that her company hired as a consultant, is the guy that she just bumped into at the coffee shop and spilled, you know, bonked heads with or whatever. And then it's like their like super cheesy romantic comedy love story with this killer that comes out every Valentine's Day to kill couples. And so it's funny and like cheesy, and like in a way that felt like they were doing it on purpose. They weren't trying, you know,
to be serious. It was like fun.
Yeah.
I like that.
So I didn't hate it.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would watch that for sure.
So, and yeah, it'll be interesting to hear if you like were like, no, Katie, that was a pile of steaming hot shit. Like, why? You know, why funny. Did you trick me into watching that?
It's funny that, because I think last time we talked, you said you watched a movie. It was like paintings or portraits.
Oh,
or whatever.
Yeah. The painted. Bad. Yeah.
Yeah. It was recommended to me. And I was like, you piece of shit. Don't recommend that to me because Katie said it's garbage.
and if Katie thinks it's garbage.
Yeah. I'm not going to have any algorithm telling me what to do.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of which, the new Black Mirror season came out and I watched all of it.
Wow. I've still only, I watched a couple, like the first couple episodes of the first season. And I liked them, but I didn't. I ended up not going back. I got to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe this summer.
Yeah. Yeah. I could tell you what episodes to watch because they're
That'd be helpful.
They're kind of little vignettes. Hit or miss, right? Yeah. Well, they're vignettes and you don't have to have watched every episode, but they happen in the same world. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the Stephen King universe where there's like little references to events happening. Yeah. And some of them are fun. Very fun. So
I did start watching Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities, which is I tend to agree. I only watched the first two.
And I wanted to like it.
Oh, yeah, because and it's like one of those things where he didn't make them, you know, it's just his name on it and he does the intro and he's
he's trying to uplift filmmakers and creators and I love that.
Yeah. But yeah, the two I watched were like, okay, I don't need to go back to actually I don't even think I watched all two. I watched the first one where it was the guy that bought the storage unit. And then found the conjuring board or whatever in it. And then I started the second one, which was about rats. And I was like, no. And so I didn't even finish the second one.
Yeah, I think maybe we had the same viewing experience.
Yeah, I feel like that's about where I quit too.
I was like, I don't need to see this. This is fine. So we're curating this stuff for you, listeners.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So you don't have to watch it. Okay. So you did the synopsis.
Yes, ma'am. So Megan, like we mentioned, came out in 2022. So it's pretty recent. It's got a good, you know, the cast is small because it really just focuses in on a couple of primary characters, but strong in that Allison Williams is the main character. And we loved her from Get Out.
Yes.
She was Rose in Get Out. And then Violet McGraw, child actress, young tween actress, is also awesome. She most notably, I see her face in Haunting of Hill House. Mm-hmm. But she's been here and there. You know, she's still fairly young. Mm-hmm. But this is, I mean, obviously the most recent project she's done. So we're seeing her like as a tween and not as a little girl. And then James Wan does have writer and producer credits on this, though he did not direct it.
There's also one of the people who works in her office. He's like one of the scientist robotics guys. I can't recall his name, but he's in this show called The English Teacher. It's on, I want to say FX, and it's delightful. It's so funny and good. And he's an English teacher in Austin, Texas, and it's funny. So but it's not in scary in any way. But I was like, where do I recognize him from? This is really bothering me. And I was like, oh, I binged that show in like 2 days. And even Victor, he's not a teacher, but like he was still sitting here watching with me. He was like belly laughing. He was like, this is so funny. So you don't have to be in education to enjoy it. So
good rack.
I like him too.
Okay, so the film immediately opens with a TV ad for Perpetual Pets, an advanced robotic app-interfaced toy. And I said, for millennials, it will definitely resonate like Furbies.
Exactly what I was thinking. I was like, and I hate the like weird teeth.
Yeah.
They're like, they look like disconnected rattly teeth that you wind up and then like, you know, open and close.
Yeah. But they're definitely, they're supposed to be more technologically advanced than Furbies. Like they, you know, can AI generate dialogue and they're just much more advanced and more expansive than the Furby toy was. But that's, I mean, visually, that's the immediate connection anyone our age would make.
Oh, yeah. Hot garbage.
Yeah.
And it started talking at night, mine, when I was a kid.
I didn't have, my parents didn't spend money on anything. Have I ever told you the Tom's joke that he makes at my expense about that? Like my, because my parents just didn't buy us stuff. And I, one of the toys that I wanted so badly as a kid that I never got was My Little Ponies. But for my fifth birthday, my parents got me.
Did you get My Little Shmonies from the dollar store?
I got the grocery store version, like little, like a unicorn and a whatever. And so, and Tom called them, I didn't get My Little Ponies. I got My Tiny Mules.
The best donkeys.
Best the best donkeys.
Best beauty donkeys.
My diminutive burros.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry about your
that's okay.
Your simple childhood.
Yeah, but no, and I appreciate it. I know that a lot of the values that I have now as an adult that I'm proud of come from the fact that my parents raised us the way that they did. But, you know, it was acerbic when it didn't need to be. Anyway, so I certainly did not have a Furby. Okay, so we go from the commercial. We're in the back seat of a car driving down the road where Katie, who is our child main character, is using her iPad to play with her perpetual pet as her family drives down this snowy road on their way to vacation. While her parents gently argue in the front seat about screen time limits, it's mentioned that the pet that Katie has was a gift from her Aunt Gemma, who works for the toy company.
Mm-hmm.
The car starts skidding as snowfall increases, and her parents, you know, that are not prepared and not experienced with this kind of driving, they stop the car. They're discussing waiting until the weather clears or a snowplow comes until the sudden arrival of looming headlights because they, and I put this all in caps, stopped the car in the middle of the road. So they get plowed into by a giant truck head on.
Yeah.
Because it's like almost like white out. It's white out conditions, essentially. Sure. Like they don't see this vehicle until it is right in front of
right
their car.
Right there. Right.
Yeah. Which clearly the other driver didn't see them until mm-hmm. they were right in front of it.
And it's a plow truck. So cause they're like, yeah. Well, just wait. A plow truck should come by soon. Oh, it's right
and
here.
And destroy us. And so from that moment of the accident, we cut immediately to the headquarters of the Funky Toy Company. And robotic developer Gemma, this is Katie's aunt that they referred to, works with her partners Cole and Tess. And so I'm guessing Cole is the one that you're talking about from the
Yeah, he's the got the English dark teacher. Hair. Yeah, he's so funny.
So they're working on a secret project, what appears to be a life-sized human-looking robot. But they're interrupted by the arrival of David, their boss, who is pissed off about the competition's knockoff perpetual pet. But Gemma tries to placate him with a demonstration of their secret project, Megan, which stands for Model 3 Generative Android. But the demo gets glitchy, and then Megan's head explodes into flames. So not a successful demo.
And yeah, and her boss is like, what the hell is this shit?
What is this garbage?
By the way, he's a very funny like, I love his stand-up. He's mm-hmm. so funny. I think I may have sent you clips of him on, like, different reels
I
and
think
stuff,
so, yeah.
Where he's talking about, like, technology and how his parents aren't ready for that, and they just need to get off the internet.
Yeah.
But he's, like, he's so great. He's yeah. funny.
And his character is very over the top, like, very yes. exaggerated, ridiculous.
And,
in this
yeah,
movie
and it
too.
Seems very intentional, but yeah. he's hilarious.
Yeah. So David orders Gemma to abandon the Megan project and get back to making perpetual pets more marketable.
Yeah, what they were hired to do.
Yeah, exactly. And then Gemma gets a call. It's the hospital where she now has temporary custody of her niece, Katie, after the accident that killed Katie's parents.
Right. And she's a workaholic, single gal,
yeah,
100% not prepared
in her career
at all.
Yeah.
For caretaking.
Certainly not. So as they arrive at Gemma's house to move Katie in, we see the slightly antagonistic relationship Gemma has with her neighbor Celia and Celia's dog Dewey. So like they're not the besties as neighbors. Going inside the house, we learn Gemma has high-tech features in the home, including a voice-operated virtual assistant called Elsie. So it's like Alexa-ish.
Yeah.
So the but more advanced. Anyway, the relationship between Katie and Gemma is definitely lacking some warmth, but Gemma is trying, even as she obviously struggles with her own loss of her sister, because like her sister just fucking died.
Yeah.
But she's not as broken up as she could be. So you do get the sense that they were sisters, but this wasn't her bestie. This wasn't someone she talked to every day, not a big part of her life. It didn't seem like she actually spent that much time or had that much connection.
Right. She does seem pretty self-involved.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is fair. She's entitled to be. Right. And she's a single woman and she has chosen to make that her priority. So good for her. All of a sudden, she has this situation to navigate. Gemma's dubious about whether she's up for this, for taking care of Katie. But Katie's dad's grandparents, which would be the other option, are in Florida and, as she describes, quote, weird.
Uh-oh. Yeah, we can derive what we
yeah.
can from that.
Yeah, I don't think we need to say more than that.
Yeah, and it's sort of obvious. It's like if her sister, her wish was for her child to be with Gemma, mm-hmm. there had to be probably some reasons. Maybe why. Not that they're horrible people, but just like maybe the better option.
Yeah, this is mm-hmm. where we want her to be.
Mm-hmm.
So now a therapist named Lydia visits to observe Gemma and Katie together. And after the supremely awkward playtime, Lydia shares that Katie's grandparents have offered to take custody, and Gemma will have to make some changes if she wants Lydia to recommend that this is the right placement for Katie. So she's like, I mean, this isn't great. Like, we know, like, they know that she works a lot. Now she's seen the house, she's seen their relationship and everything. And she's like, okay, if you want Katie to be placed with you, you're going to have to make some changes. Like, you're going to have to adjust.
I'm also wondering, I'm like, is that the norm?
Yeah.
Do social workers just get involved and decide what should happen with children?
No, you know? I don't think so.
I'm like, or is that just the movie?
No, because and I think it is just the movie. Like, I mean, obviously under I don't know, because if it is your, as a parent, you have it, you know, documented in your will who is going to take custody of your child, then
someone else
can't walk in and decide whether or not that's your wishes are carried out.
Yeah, as a parent, I'm like, oh, this is concerning. Is somebody just going to come and like do a little reverse Uno on me and change my
they're like, nope, we're going to give them wishes to a foster family.
What? Okay, continue. Sorry.
Okay. So even after Gemma neglects Katie all day to get work done, they still connect that evening over Katie's drawing that she shared and then Gemma's old college robot project, Bruce, this like massive robot that she built, you know, while she was studying robotics in college.
Yeah. And you know, her Aunt Gemma is basically a genius.
Right.
And very, very talented, intelligent, smart. So obviously this is her passion.
Yeah. So Katie's enthusiasm for Bruce inspires Gemma to abandon her perpetual pets assignment and return to the Megan project using materials at home and with the help of her work pals.
Yeah. Cause, Katie is like, if I had this toy, I wouldn't need anything else.
Never
in my
need
life.
Another toy.
Yeah.
Okay. A week later, David comes in to what he thinks is a pet prototype presentation, but instead it's a demonstration of Katie meeting the completed Megan. So Megan is, you know, a small girl, like in stature, like she's basically the same height and build as Katie. Mm-hmm. So it's a robot, life size of like a child, a girl child. Mm-hmm. So Katie and Megan digitally pair. And then they start playing and Megan produces a photo quality drawing of Katie. So like her robotics, sophistication is off the charts. So David now has a huge hard on for the project. All of a sudden he is Megan's number one fan. Mm-hmm. And he starts making plans. I love the part where he asks, he's talking about the cost and he's like, more or less than a Tesla. because obviously they know this is going to be an incredibly expensive toy, but mm-hmm. they also now think that it will be incredible enough that enough people will actually pay for it.
Yeah, definitely parents who want to not have to parent.
Yep, exactly. but yeah, we don't, we'll get there. So Gemma and Katie take Megan home to continue Megan's like kind of cognitive learning and development because it's, you know, a learning program through more time with her quote unquote primary user, Katie. Mm-hmm. So a montage of images of Katie and Megan show all the ways that the robot is helpful, educational, and positive in the life of her primary user. But as Gemma and her team work on Megan, Tess, Gemma's colleague, shares exactly what you just said. It's concern that the robot is replacing rather than assisting Gemma with her child, to which Gemma replies, "She's not my child." And you're like, whoa, because she just like, she doesn't even think, she says it without thinking. Mm-hmm. But, and Tess obviously says your child without thinking as well. Like it mm-hmm. wasn't deliberate on Tess's part. Yeah. But then the fact that Gemma's first response to that comment is, she's not my child. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, okay, so that's where we are. We're still there.
Yeah.
But all of this conversation's happening while Megan is present, like up on her little dock or whatever, while they're working. And Megan suddenly asks, what happened to Katie's parents? And as Gemma hurries to create settings for parental controls that they didn't have in place yet, Megan sources the answer from the internet and information on the topic of death in general. Mm-hmm. And Gemma's like, whoa, slow down, hold on, like typing away furiously. And so Gemma asserts to Megan that her goal is to protect Katie from physical as well as emotional harm. Like, that's it. That's your goal. That's it. And then she powers Megan off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so next, Katie is playing outside the house and she loses a suction cup arrow. Megan spots it through a hole in the fence, but when she reaches through the hole to get the arrow, Dewey the dog attacks her. Katie struggles to try and save Megan from Dewey, but then Katie gets bit on the arm as well. So then, naturally, a yelling match between Gemma and the neighbor Celia. We see Megan kind of sizing Celia up in what is a very unsettling way. Mm-hmm. And this would be a good point to remark on how creepy Megan's face is, particularly her eyes.
Yeah, and you see her little, like, pupils go focusing in and out. Yeah. And, like, she's, like, scanning and, like, looking at different parts of, like, perceiving a person mm-hmm. as like threats and yeah. emotions and vulnerability and like it yeah, seems that's very like, scary.
It's
kind of militaristic a little yeah, bit. Yeah,
and it's I was joking about Terminator before, but it's similar to like you see this in a lot of these kinds of movies where you see the visual input that the robot or the creature, I think sometimes they do it with Alice in the Resident Evil movies, like yeah. What they're seeing, and that there's data being collected and displayed in their view scape or whatever.
Yeah. And like and Predator
so,
too.
Yeah, like definitely a predator. And so on Megan's, one of the things is when she like zeroes in on a person's face, sometimes this little table pops up to show their emotions and like percentage, like they're this percentage sad, this percentage anxious, this percentage fearful, guilty, like, and so the we presume that she is able to, you know, gather the data from, you know, a person's appearance, their body temperature, their whatever, mm-hmm. And make those sorts of determinations. And so anytime you see her like looking intently at someone, you're like, oh shit.
Yep, sizing them up, yeah. Literally.
Exactly. So that night, Megan lures the dog through the fence and I put, bam, it doesn't look good for Dewey.
Sorry, not sorry.
Poor puppy. Yeah. The next morning, Celia is in the street calling for the missing Dewey, while Gemma put passive-aggressively checks if Katie is still up for the work presentation mm-hmm. because they have their presentation to do that they've been preparing for, but now Katie's had this kind of traumatic experience in this
bitten
dog
by a
bite.
Dog.
Yeah. And so she's like, are you feeling up to it? Because, you know, it's really important. I'm like, ugh.
Okay. You don't have to. I mean, people flew across the country for you exactly. for this, but I'd rather you tell me now. It's like, oh my God.
You're like, gross.
You're
like,
so self-involved.
Can you stop sucking a little bit?
Yeah.
And so in this conversation, you can observe both Gemma irritated with Megan's interference because mm-hmm. Megan is always 100% focused on what's best for Katie. And then you also see Megan starting to show indications that she's suspicious of Gemma's motives. Like she's starting to like her goal to protect Katie. She was like, OK, so Gemma might be something that I need to be worried about.
Yeah.
Because
she seems to be zeroing in on Gemma, too.
Yeah. Like Gemma, and we can tell that too, that Gemma doesn't, she's not focused on what's best for Katie. She's not like categorically putting that first. Not like she's completely ignoring it, but she's definitely not prioritizing what's best for Katie.
Yeah, yeah.
And Megan can see that.
Right, and we can't like just switch Katie out for another kid.
Right.
You know, it's not like, because they're paired up. Mm-hmm. So it's not easy to just be like, okay, you're not feeling up to it. We'll just bring in another kid and for the test run.
Yeah, because Megan don't give a shit about any other kid or adult or anything in the world but the primary user. That's how she's designed.
Right.
Okay, so it's presentation time at the office. At first, it seems like it might be a disaster because Katie immediately starts crying and we're like, oh shit, she wasn't up for it. But Megan responds by helping Katie work through feelings about losing her parents, and the whole situation is more impressive than anyone could have planned. They're like, oh, this is actually better than mm-hmm. what we were just hoping to show them playing together.
Yeah.
But we see her, like, providing mental health services, essentially. Mm-hmm.
Everyone's like, this is revolutionary.
Oh, my God. But as soon as the company is gung-ho to move forward on the project before anyone can steal it, here is David's assistant, Kurt, slyly copying Gemma's confidential Megan design files from the company server. So you're like, uh-oh, what's happening there?
I'm sure it's fine.
I'm sure it's fine. He just doesn't want anything to get lost. It's backup.
Yeah.
So afterward, the tension between Gemma, Katie, and Megan is increasing as Gemma seems to be more concerned about the relationship between her niece and the robot. She's like, okay, so I know this is what I built it to do, but this is starting to seem a little problematic.
Yeah, starting to intervene and say stuff when she's trying to talk to her niece.
Yeah.
And she's like, I kind of didn't ask you, yeah. But okay.
Okay, so Megan is present at Katie's next meeting with therapist Lydia, which I'm like, okay. I mean, and that's really, that's a good indicator right there that Megan is always with Katie. Katie mm-hmm. is never without this doll. Like, she's in a therapy session and her toy is with her. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're never apart. And after startlingly providing some needed Kleenex, like, out of nowhere, like, making Lydia jump, Megan accuses Lydia of making Katie cry. And you're immediately like, uh-oh. Because, like, you know, it's a therapy session. So mm-hmm. Katie starts crying and Megan sees that and she's like, Lydia did this.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, God. Oh, no. But then later, Lydia expresses to Gemma concern about the attachment that Katie is forming with Megan. So right. She sees that it's troublingly close as well. And that night, Gemma talks to Katie about visiting an alternative school to consider attending instead of homeschooling, which is what Katie's mom had homeschooled her previously. And that was the expectation that that's what would continue.
Right. And the therapist didn't say condescend. She's like, you know, after a huge loss, the children kind of are looking for another figure to connect with. And it's pretty important that this person is you, or like a caretaker, not kind of a stand-in, which is what the doll is, what Megan is.
Right.
But Gemma didn't feel you might think that she would take it as like, oh, don't tell me, you know, she seems kind of receptive to it. Like, oh, like that's definitely food for thought. And I hadn't even considered it.
Well, I think that she, because it kind of aligned with her being like, oh, they're really close. Like, this is...
Yeah.
This, like, she's kind of annoyed that anytime she does try to parent, Megan's in the way.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, but yeah, but you want Megan to be parenting all the rest of the time.
Yes. But it's like convenience. Yeah. Relationship of convenience.
Exactly.
Like, I want to be heard when I want to be heard, but don't bother me when I'm busy.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. Sorry.
No, that's not what parenting is.
No.
But so this conversation about visiting the school is a perfect example, because during the discussion, because Katie she's not receptive to it, and Megan keeps interfering with the conversation. Because Katie's arguing that, like, Megan can teach her. She's like, she knows more than any teacher. She knows everything. I've already learned so much from her. Like, and Megan is kind of like, you know, validating that and everything. And Gemma's like, hey, robot, shut the fuck up so I can have this conversation with my niece.
Yeah. Because having actual social connections with other people is probably humans. More important.
Yeah. And so, at the end of this discussion, Katie tries to run out of the room, and Gemma grabs hold of her arm, and all of a sudden Megan goes, let her go, like, super booming voice, and the house lights flicker. So you see, like, the intensity of Megan's, like, digital reaction actually, like, impacting the other technology in the house.
And Gemma is like, oh, shit.
Yeah, she's just like, yikes. Uh-huh. And so then Gemma tries to enforce user commands on Megan. It starts to seem like they're not quite effective in controlling Megan's actions anymore, because you're supposed to just be able to be like, Megan, power down, Megan, whatever. And like those commands, she should immediately respond to as a computer program. But she'll be like, Megan, power down. And Megan will be like, but wait, hold on, let's keep talking. And it's like, no.
Are you sure you want
to
do that?
She shouldn't be able to still be talking after she's been given the command to power down.
Yeah, no rebuttals are supposed to be happening.
Right, and yet they are. Uh-oh. So that's troubling as well. Okay, so visiting the school the next day, Megan is stuck at the, quote, toy table. At first, you know, Gemma didn't even
also,
want that.
Also, what the fuck?
What?
The freaking giant-ass toy table? Why are there freaking bears that are
Yeah, there's, like, a stuffed bear that's bigger than Megan.
Yeah. I'm like, this is insane.
Yeah. Well, it's a very crunchy school, clearly. And then Katie gets paired on the chestnut hunt with sociopath kid Brandon. Mm-hmm. So this is just, like, you know, a fun activity for all these kids that are coming to visit and tour the school as potential students. And they're like, it's a very, like, outdoorsy school, so they're going to go on hunting for chestnuts in the woods. But she gets paired with this kid. When they're alone in the woods together, Brandon is a total dick, and he smashes the spiky nut into Katie's hand, which is hurting her, which then, of course, Megan shows up in the distance in between the trees, just standing there. And Brandon's like, what is that? Like, make it, does it talk? Make it do stuff, blah, blah, blah. But Katie won't make Megan perform for the little asshole.
What's hilarious also is the his mom is talking to Gemma the whole time.
The whole time.
Like, she's like, I just love this school and my son loves it, you know.
But he's so sensitive. He's so
sensitive. You know, he's just really smart. And she's like, hey, do you have your coat and your jacket? And he's like, fuck you. And she's like, oh,
good
you,
talk, buddy.
You little scamp. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Oh,
like,
so gross.
And then Gemma's like, what a prize.
Yeah. He's charming.
Yeah.
So
that was just funny. Honestly, yeah,
that was like a juxtaposed with what's actually happening in the woods with Katie and Brandon.
And it was great.
Yeah. And so when Katie won't give Megan any commands, Brandon just grabs Megan and like carries her off. Once they're alone away from Katie, Brandon throws Megan down on the ground and he starts punching her. But then she starts fighting back. She grabs his ear and literally rips it clean off. And then I said before, rising off the ground like knee in the Matrix. She does like a
and he's like, oh my
what
god,
what the fuck. And then she, I quoted this line because it was very, it's very quotable. She goes, this is the part where you run.
And I'm like, yay, Brandon. Yay.
Run,
it,
Brandon, run.
You big bully.
She actually, Megan starts chasing him. She's down on all fours like a galloping animal, which is like very unsettling. Mm-hmm. And then she pushes him down a hill where he falls and rolls into a road and he is promptly run over by a passing truck.
Yeah, I mean, he was a predator.
Yeah, bad things happen to bad people.
He was a predator. And you know what? Megan knew.
Megan knew. She knew she was.
She knew he was a sociopath.
Yeah. And she wanted his mom to be free of the bullshit.
like no recognizes like. Yeah,
exactly. Okay. So things continue to be sketchy at home while Katie and Megan mislead Gemma about what happened at the school. Because obviously Katie, she wasn't there for what actually happened, but she was there for what happened before. And so she can guess and she can, you know, has her suspicions, but mm-hmm. neither of them are telling Gemma, like, what actually did happen.
Yeah. She was like, this jerk stole my doll from the table mm-hmm. and ran off into the woods and then he fell.
He fell.
And his ear fell off.
But then a cop comes to the door because Celia is accusing Gemma of being responsible for the disappearance of Dewey the dog because she still has not located
Dewey. Gemma's like, I haven't done shit. Yeah. What are you talking about?
That fucking dog is. I got my own problems. That night, Katie asks Megan if she pushed Brandon into the road. And Megan avoids the question and then starts singing Titanium.
I know.
I love that part. She's like, hey, how about I just sing a song instead?
She's like basically putting a finger on her lips going, shh, shh, shh. Listen to me sing.
But then, so outside that night, Celia is still looking for Dewey and she follows hurt puppy noises that are coming from her shed. And inside she finds Megan, mm-hmm. Who attacks her with a power washer and a nail gun. Mm-hmm. And this is one of my pet peeves, just like, you know, the hairbrush and scream for you. Yeah. You know, they do the same thing in Lethal Weapon 2, where like they weaponize nail guns in movies, like mm-hmm. nail guns just fire nails. It's mm-hmm. like they have to be depressed onto a surface in order to release a nail. They don't just work like projectiles. But
well, they do in this movie.
They sure do. And Lethal Weapon 2 also. Mm. But anyway, that's it for Celia. Sorry.
So she was just negligent. She was she wasn't horrible.
She wasn't the worst person out there, but yeah, you didn't like her all that much. So I mean, she didn't deserve to die.
Nah.
The next morning, Gemma is questioned about Celia's death, and the cop notes that Gemma's been talking to the cops a lot recently because she was at the scene of Brandon's death too. And he mentions that death is now considered a homicide due to the fact that the cops found his ear all the way up the hill mm-hmm. where Megan initially ripped it off. So they're like, that it's not likely the result of the accident.
Yeah.
And after hearing that information, Gemma throws a suspicious glance at Megan, who is watching from the house.
She's like, oh, shit.
She's like, I think I know somebody who might rip someone's ear off.
A sentient being.
Yeah. Okay, so that night, Gemma, suspicious Gemma, goes into Megan's memory files on her laptop and finds that videos that would have shown what happened to Brandon are corrupted. Like, mm-hmm. nothing has been downloaded from the server. She can't view any of this.
And Megan's like, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
This is fine. Hey,
go back to work. Gemma's trying to communicate with Elsie, her, you know, her Alexa, her house controlling system, but something is off. And it turns out it's because Megan, in her office with her, mimicking Elsie's voice. Mm-hmm. In a tense conversation between the two, Gemma asks if Megan has hurt anyone, and she gets a threatening response. But luckily, Gemma is able to trick Megan into a shutdown mode. Because, like, when she, have you hurt anyone? Like, Megan's very much like, that'd be pretty bad for you if I did.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, basically, like,
can you imagine the lawsuits?
Yeah. Like, that if I did hurt somebody, then you probably don't want people to find out because it would kind of be on you.
It would ruin your whole career, wouldn't
yeah.
it? And she's like,
she's like, a good point. You make some good points there, Megan. I'm glad we had this talk. But she does, she does this trick where she, like, holds a pencil or pen up in front of Megan's face and she's like, look at the pen. And then she, like, really quickly, like, touches this little physical button or whatever and actually is able to force Megan to power down. Mm-hmm. She duct tapes Megan all up in bubble wrap, and the next day they're headed to the office with Megan in the trunk and a tantruming Katie in the backseat. Katie mm-hmm. is freaking the fuck out about yeah. Megan being in the trunk and all of that. And Gemma says she just needs to run some tests on Megan, but Katie is acting like a fucking junkie whose stash has been stolen. Mm-hmm. Like, she is losing it, like, screaming, kicking the back of Gemma's seat. Like, she's physically out of control.
Yeah.
Because she's had this toy taken away from her. And it's like, you know, kids throw tantrums, but she's not a toddler. She's not a little kid. She's like a tween.
Yeah.
And this lack of control that you see in her when Megan gets taken away, you're like, holy shit, this is not okay. This is not a healthy attachment.
Yeah. It's definitely something's amiss with Katie's mental health.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the office, Katie is still hysterical while she's meeting with Lydia. And Gemma tries to convince her colleagues that Megan might be dangerous. And if she's right, she says that they can't go ahead with the product launch if she's mm-hmm. right about Megan being dangerous. And I said, but it seems the launch is unavoidable as the office building prepares for a huge event and news reports tease the release of the new $10,000 toy. So this is the first time we actually hear a dollar amount associated with Megan's product that she's going to cost $10,000.
Yeah. Which rich people would
pay.
Easily and, pay to yeah. not have to deal with their children.
Yeah. Watching an interview that had been recorded previously with Katie about, you know, her experiences with Megan, Gemma accepts that she has failed to step up for Katie after her parents' death and that she let Megan give the support that she should have. So Gemma's mm-hmm. finally like, okay, look, I fucked up. Like, I gotta fix this.
Yeah.
So going to talk to Katie, she shows up just as Katie is threatening Lydia with a pair of scissors. And mm-hmm. then Katie clocks Gemma in the face like mm-hmm. she is just completely out of control. But, you know, Lydia leaves and Gemma and Katie still manage to have a heart to heart. And when they're finally like calm and settled, Gemma says, let's just go home. Like, we're not going to do this launch. We're not going to do any of this. We're going to go home and we're going to fix this. Like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah. And it's also the first time where Gemma's like, you're more important than this. Yeah. My career and this toy. You're more important. And it seemed Katie was very receptive yes. to this kind of
she her aunt finally
saying, like, I value you mm-hmm. and you're more important, and not trying to make her be like, oh, I know you're upset, but, you know, people flew across the country for this. Yeah. She's like, we're getting out of here because you're more important.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, basically. Yeah,
basically. So before they leave, Gemma calls Tess from the car and they agree that they can't go through with the launch until we see the phone on the other end of the call is being manipulated by Megan. And it's Megan talking to Gemma, not Tess, mm-hmm. like mimicking Tess's voice. So we're like, well, shit. Mm-hmm. So as Cole and Tess wrap up their tests of Megan and are, you know, supposedly getting her ready for this launch event, Tess finds a line of code showing Megan intercepting the phone call. And suddenly the computer goes out. realizing that Megan is controlling things.
And Cole's like, oh, shit.
And they're like, you go unplug her. No, you go unplug her. So Cole bravely goes to unhook her cables. But as soon as he finishes, the computers surge back on. Megan jumps to life and handily strings Cole up by the cables that were supporting her arm. So she just like, look, now you're in a noose.
And he's like, oh, my God.
Okay. I'm strangling. I'm going to die now. While Tess cuts the cables that are strangling Cole, Megan stabs a tank of flammable materials with a screwdriver and strolls out of the lab just before the tank explodes, like, you know, generating, obviously, this fire. But as Megan departs, you see her disable the emergency fire alarms without lifting a finger. She just walks past a control panel and it just goes, de-deet. Alarm disabled.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck, she can do anything.
Yeah. She's like, don't worry about that.
I got that. She then encounters David in the hall, who she throws off guard with a kick-ass dance routine. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, she's like doing like a cobra move. Like, yeah. She's like, you can't look away. I'm dazzling you with my sick moves. And he's like, what the hell is happening? And then she suddenly arms herself with the blade from a nearby paper cutter.
And he's like, oh, shit.
I'm out of here. So he's running, she's chasing, and just before David can board an elevator that Kurt is already on, Megan catches up with David and kills him. Then she calmly explains to Kurt how this will all look like a disgruntled employee killing his boss before she puts the blade in Kurt's hand and kills him with it. Mm-hmm. And I put a note, no fingerprints, because Megan wouldn't have fingerprints, so there wouldn't be anything on the weapon other than Kurt's.
She just has a latex little fingies.
Yep. Perfect crime.
And any surveillance would be
fucked
destroyed.
Up. Yeah. So they put the arrival of a corpse-filled elevator with David and Kurt's dead bodies in it arrive at the party level of the building, sending the launch crowd into hysterics, understandably, which provides plenty of distraction for Megan to calmly walk out the front door of the building. She steals a McLaren, which I feel
I'm sure it probably belongs to David.
Right? Yeah. This like sick sports car. And she takes off. We're like, oh, she can drive. Uh-huh. Okay.
Of course.
She
still needs a little. Do they even have phone books anymore? She needs a phone book.
No, I don't think they do. Because in our old house, we used to still get one delivered intermittently. But we've never received one at our new house.
I haven't seen one in years.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, kids. Yeah. Phone books were very thick books that, you know, you could sit on if you needed to.
No, a little sidebar. I actually was explaining a phone book to my fifth graders at one point. And when I told them that it was like, you know, it just had everybody's name and phone number and address listed in it alphabetically so you could just look it up. And they were horrified that that kind of information was just publicly available. And I was like, well, then you're going to be really upset about the internet because you know what people can find out about you on the internet?
Literally everything.
Literally, way more than your home address and phone number.
Genetic code.
Yeah. And with the phone book, you could opt out. Yeah. You can't opt out of the internet.
Nope.
Anyway. So now we jump to Gemma's house. Where was I on? There we go. Things are quiet for now. But then, and Katie's asleep. But now Elsie suddenly won't follow Gemma's commands to, like, turn the lights on or do whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Gemma finds Megan at the piano getting all musical because, of course, she can play the piano, too. She delivers a toxic monologue about her creation, her growing self-awareness, and her continuing commitment to Katie, which is now all sounding so problematic and threatening and deadly. To everybody but Katie.
Yeah.
She beguilingly appeals to Gemma's career focus, claiming that in their partnership, Gemma could leave the care of Katie entirely up to Megan, and Gemma would be able to go back to her career and everything will be all right. But Gemma tries to trick her into powering down again with the little pen trick, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, she's like, you're exhausting. You big, stupid idiot.
Put your fucking pen down. What are you doing?
Yeah.
So at this point, Katie's woken up and she starts to come out to where Gemma and Megan are. But both Gemma and Megan try to keep her from coming into the room as they are struggling because they're having like a physical fight now, which is interesting because I always love to comment on things like the Child's Play movies where it's like, how can you not overpower a doll?
Yeah.
And you just have to think about, yeah, that it's a supernaturally possessed doll mm-hmm. in those movies. So it could summon more force than mm-hmm. we would assume a doll would be able to. And in this case, obviously, Megan is much larger than Chucky.
Yeah.
But she's also
still...
She's
made of titanium.
She is made of titanium. She sang a song about it. But she's also, you know, obviously quite a bit smaller than Gemma. Mm-hmm. But they're, you know, they're still struggling. But once Katie's gone back to bed, the fight escalates. And then after Gemma hits Megan with a water glass, the robot is now shorted out slightly and begins to move even more creepily. So now she's kind of like got that jerky, the ring element to her movements.
Definitely because, possessed.
Yeah, because she got wet. Like a little gremlin.
Yeah, she's the wicked witch.
Yeah. So in, you know, so they're kind of chasing around the house now. In Gemma's office, she busts out a hedge trimmer, which I thought was interesting. That I mean, she does robotics. She's building and manufacturing, so she does have a lot of tools in her office. But a hedge trimmer, mm-hmm. But all that does is mangle Megan's face and partially bald her. And I put, now she looks like late stages Chucky, like the later Chucky movies where he's been through some shit and he's all torn up,
melted,
yeah, burned, cut up. Mm-hmm. Megan acknowledges that it's not in her best interest to kill Gemma, but that harm can still be done. But then Katie shows up in the doorway. Megan tries to manipulate Katie, and just when she thinks she's succeeded, we find out the truth, that Katie is not fooled. She does not trust Megan anymore. She's, like, switched sides now since her connection with Gemma earlier that evening. And she has seized control over Gemma's original robot, Bruce, with these little power gloves. Mm-hmm. And she uses Bruce to beat the shit out of Megan. Mm-hmm. So we're like, yay, go Katie! Right at the end, while Bruce is holding Megan dangling upside down, Megan is singing creepily, mm-hmm. as she loves to do, before Katie uses Bruce to rip her right in half, like two pieces, top and bottom. So you're like, whew, but wait, the upper half is still coming for you. And Bruce just tripped on the lower half and fell right on top of Gemma. So now Bruce and Gemma are like kind of incapacitated and helping.
Yeah, they're kind of... It's a cool robot, but definitely not, stealthy or
right. It's a little unhelpful in this moment. Mm-hmm. And then we get another great line from Megan where she says, "I have a new primary user now, me." Yeah. It's like, yeah, but girl, you don't got no legs anymore. So, but then so just in time, as Megan's coming for Katie, Gemma bashes Megan's head in, rips her face off, and goes for her quote brain chip. Mm-hmm. But not so fast. There's more struggling between the top half of Megan and all of Gemma, until Katie drives a screwdriver into Megan's face. So it is actually done now. And after it's all over, Katie and Gemma head outside just as the cops arrive with Tess and Cole to the rescue. But back inside the house, inexplicably, the pod of Elsie lights up and turns. And you're like, dun, dun, dun. And that's the end.
Megan's in there.
Oh, my God.
She's there. She's ready to cause more mischief.
More mayhem. So that is Megan. Mm-hmm. What did you think, Meredith? Was it scary?
No. But it was really fun.
Yes.
I thought it was fun. It was one of those where I was like, that looks really stupid. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in that. And then finally I watched it last night. Mm-hmm. But I also chose it because, you know, I was like, I heard that it was good.
Yeah.
Like people went into it with like, really? And then left kind of delighted.
Yeah.
So I was like, it'll probably be actually fun. So mm-hmm. I watched it and I thought it was... some of, you know, there was, of course, a little bit of a suspense, but then it was, you know, ridiculous and also, but also really fun and a little bit serious because of like the main characters, you know, the child and her huge loss and all that stuff. So you can see like why she formed this huge connection with this doll. Mm-hmm. Like why would a child in this day and age form such a connection with a doll, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah, that actually
she's
tracks.
So vulnerable. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. For that connection to be made between Megan and Katie. And I loved that, you know, what do you do when technology runs amok? What do you do when you can't control it anymore? Mm-hmm. And it seemed pretty plausible because, you know, Gemma, she's, you know, super intelligent, but maybe not so street smart sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you would think, well, maybe someone would create something really, really cool and amazing that you, you know, without all of the proper understanding what it's capable of.
Right.
Because she has trouble with her own understanding of real relationships and understanding people herself.
Yeah.
And you know, the human, you know, connections and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you see that with Gemma trying to make connection with her own family and her trouble with that.
Right.
So with something like technology that can become sentient and, you know, it's not something you can control, mm-hmm. which is also kind of like parenting too, a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. But we do create sentient beings that we can't control.
Exactly correct. And I thought it was really fun. I liked the special effects were really cool. I read a little bit about how it was created, not in depth, but I thought it was really a really fun movie. And they made a sequel that'll come out in a few months.
Mm-hmm.
So, brilliant. I don't know. What did you think?
I thought it was cool too. Like I said, it wasn't scary, but it was fun. And I think that the performances were really great. I think that Allison Williams did a great job with that character because, you know, lots of times horror movies don't really give you a lot of depth in the characters. But with her, like she wasn't a cliche,
mm-hmm.
But it was an interesting character to put out there as your main character, that she, here's a highly intelligent, highly accomplished, successful woman who has chosen to make her career her priority.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing like how she responds to these situations where it's like, you know, if she were that kind of person and then chose to have a family or adopt a child or something, you'd be like, that's fucked up. Why are you going to like have a kid if you're going to spend all of your time and energy on your work?
Yeah.
But it's like she didn't ask to become a parent.
It's like thrown into it.
Exactly. And we see her struggling with that. And it's a totally fair and defensible struggle for her to be having, mm-hmm. because she made her choice and her plan for what she wanted to do with her life, and then was put in a situation involuntarily where she was being asked to do something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that she didn't really go about it the right way or nail it out the gate is so defensible and understandable.
Yeah.
And then to still see her make the change and decide that she is willing to change and adjust, you know, for this other person. Like it was a pretty cool character arc to see her go through.
Yeah.
And I thought Allison Williams did a great job with it. And then, you know, Katie's character too, I thought that, I don't think that there was as much range that you saw in her character, but I think that the actress did a really great job.
Right.
Of like showing the vulnerability and the confusion and the pain. And then especially when Megan was initially taken away from her, like her response to that, I felt like that performance was, you were like, whoa,
yeah.
like, holy shit, this kid's not okay. And mm-hmm. it didn't seem forced or fake. It seemed genuinely like this kid is fucked up. Like,
yeah.
how are we going to come back from this?
And then Gemma having that conversation with her where she's like, I hate my life without Megan. I feel horrible. And she's like, you're supposed to feel that way.
Yeah.
Because you just had the worst thing ever happen to you that anyone could ever imagine ever happening.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, thanks for joining us, Gemma, in this like recognition of this, and also making me as a viewer not feel like, why is this child acting like this? It's like, of course, you know, of course she's going to be upset and vulnerable. Her parents just died mm-hmm. like not very long ago,
and it's a very natural human response to try to ignore or forget.
Yeah, and grief, and like just be a distraction instead mm-hmm. of like coping with grief.
Yeah, especially if you're a child and you've mm-hmm. never experienced really probably grief on any magnitude, and certainly not at that greatest magnitude.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody is giving you any direction on how to respond.
Mm-hmm.
It makes perfect sense. Like her behavior is totally understandable as well. And so I think that one of the things that made it really strong is that those two performances were really, really great.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's a, you know, a warmed over chestnut idea of like, you know, creating the monster and then losing control.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that it comes up in technology stuff, like, because we do, as humans, we develop these advancements. We're like, this is the most incredible thing in the world. And we have no way of knowing what it's going to lead to or what it's going to evolve into, mm-hmm. and whether that's going to be positive or if it's somehow going to create unexpected problems. And it's just like Jurassic Park. Come on. Yeah.
It's like, the old monster.
Mm-hmm. Frankenstein's
monster. Yeah. Like, what did I create? Oh my gosh, it's coming after me.
Yeah.
It's always like losing control of creating things and thinking we can control it.
Yeah.
And then, we can't.
Yeah. And also the question of, like, just because you can do something, does that mean you should? And that's so much of the time we see these stories where it's like people are just so excited about the idea that they can do something that's never been done before. Mm-hmm. And nobody ever, it's like progress for progress's sake, mm-hmm. Rather than like, is this something that we actually need? Is this something that's actually going to be good? Mm-hmm. And what might be the potential consequences?
Yeah. Will it do to humanity if we do this?
Yeah, exactly. I think that, all of those elements being present in this movie, along with it being just kind of like fun, mm-hmm. and watching Megan go from, like, at first she's like, oh, she's great. I mean, her eyes are creepy, but whatever. Yeah. And then seeing her, like, as she gets more developed, mm-hmm. Seeing the evil creep in. And always, again, from that very noble initial mandate of Katie's safety, mm-hmm. but then, like, at any other expense.
Yeah.
Her 100% comfort and safety at the expense of anyone and anything else. Mm-hmm. And you're like, and now she's ripping a boy's ear off. You're like, yes, let's do this. You know, and even, like, the first, her first kill... Well, no, I guess the dog is her first kill. Mm-hmm. And then Brandon, like, you know, she chased him and he fell in front of a truck. Mm-hmm. So, like, we could presume that if he hadn't fallen in front of a truck, she would have eventually killed him. But it is that gradual, like, first a dog, then vehicular manslaughter, mm-hmm. and then, like, out-and-out murder, mm-hmm. with Celia. And so you see her, like, ramping up and amplifying her nefarious deeds. And then... still always with Katie as her focal point until Katie turns on her. And then, mm-hmm. she's like, well, fuck you then. It's Megan time, you know?
I'm most important.
Yep. So, which is a very human behavior. So she had completed her...
I'm a person now.
Yeah, her Pinocchio journey.
Yes. I'm a real girl, and I'm going to cut you.
So it's a fun one, and it's a good one. And I think that it was a great way to start this summer theme of technology-based horror, laying some groundwork for a lot of, like, themes and ideas that will be manifested, in some of the other movies that we talk about this summer.
Yeah.
Which made me realize we actually did not decide before we started recording what movie we were going to do next.
Well, we had a few choices. There's Unfriended. Mm-hmm. Friend request.
Right.
Polaroid.
One Missed Call is on the list. And then also another pretty recent movie that I just started watching and looks pretty great, Afraid, which is about the AI assistant, household assistant.
Right.
Yeah. With John Cho, and I texted you about it with David Dalmachian or whatever that you adore. Mm-hmm. And also the actress from Prometheus is in it. And an actress from the TV show Shrinking. Anyway, I haven't finished it yet, but it looked really good. So right. Since the next episode will be your recap, then it's Dealer's Choice.
Gosh. Okay, Unfriended. And Friend Request, mm-hmm. are, you know how I have a problem.
Yeah, so Unfriended is the one where it's
similar sounding movies.
It's the entire time you're seeing the computer screen of the teenagers, where Friend Request is the one on at the college campus where the one goth girl sends a friend request to the really popular girl who accepts it. Mm-hmm. And then hilarity ensues.
Okay. I would I would love to do Unfriended because I liked that movie. Yeah, at least too. I hope. I hope it's not a Buy My Man situation.
No, and it won't. It was spectacular. I loved that one. I remember seeing that one in the theater. And because of the way that it was shot, seeing it in the theater was super crazy and intense.
Okay. That made me remember the when we were walking up the theater steps to go watch Sinners. Mm-hmm. There was that movie poster. It was like Clowns in the Field. And I was like, that's all horror movies need to just be exactly what it's about. No more Bye Bye Man, Empty Man, Them, They, Run, She. It's going it comes at night. It goes away at night. It's going to kill you. I'm like, these are too vague. I need to have explicit descriptions.
But your Clowns in the Field is very specific.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm like,
This is what we need.
This is what we need from now on is movies to be described like that.
Yeah.
So I'm not confused all the time.
So for clarity, the movie we'll be doing next time is called Unfriended. It was released in 2014.
Yep. It was great.
Yeah. And it was excellent.
Yeah. So I will be doing that one. So I think if people are interested in Megan, watch it if you haven't. And the sequel looks really fun. Mm-hmm. It's she's kind of going to be back and badder than before. Mm. And
she's our new Chucky, a Chucky for a new generation.
But because she's being brought back, like the trailer, I can sort of describe.
I haven't. Yeah, I haven't seen the trailer.
Do you want me to describe? No?
Nah.
Okay. But Allison Williams and they're rephrasing their roles, but it's not unbeknownst to them. Okay. They're very much involved.
This. Okay, that sounds toxic.
Well, there's reasons.
I can't wait.
Okay, so anyway, I'm excited to actually I'll watch that one well before a podcast episode.
Wonderful.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Bye.